Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is episode 172 of Paranormal Stories. This episode I'm reading from Chris Carter's book, The Case for the Afterlife, Evidence of Life After Death. When I have guests on my podcasts, I read their books to work out questions for the episodes. When reading these books, I always find such amazing information that never makes it into the podcast, and here I get a chance to give you a peek into the book. I've put a link to the book in the show notes, and I did seek permission to record this extract, and the author kindly said yes. I'm going to be reading from chapter 6, which is titled Deathbed Visions, and this is what Chris has written. Extraordinary visions experienced shortly before death have been reported throughout history. But the first systematic attempt to study the phenomenon was made by a physics professor at the Royal College of Science in Dublin, Sir William Barrett. On the night of January 12, 1924, Barrett's wife, a physician, rushed home to tell her husband of a remarkable event that she had witnessed. She had delivered the child of a woman named Doris, and although the baby was delivered safely, Doris herself lay dying. Lady Barrett described what happened next. Suddenly, she looked eagerly towards one part of the room, a radiant smile illuminating her whole countenance. "Oh, lovely, lovely," she said. I asked, "What is lovely?" "What I see," she replied in low, intense tones. "What do you see?" "Lovely brightness, wonderful beings." It is difficult to describe the sense of reality conveyed by her intense absorption in the vision. Then, seeming to focus her attention more intently on one place for a moment, she exclaimed, almost with a kind of joyous cry, "Why, it's Father! Oh, he's so glad I'm coming. He is so glad. It would be perfect if only W, her husband, would come too." Her baby was brought for her to see. She looked at it with interest and then said, "Do you think I ought to stay for baby's sake?" Then turning towards the vision again, she said, I can't stay. If you could see what I do, you would know I can't stay." Yet suddenly she was surprised to see her sister Vida also with her father. Vida had died 3 weeks previous, but Doris had not been told because of her precarious health. She spoke to her father saying, "I am coming," turning at the same time to look at me, saying, "Oh, he is so near." On looking at the same place again, she said with a rather puzzled expression, "He has Vida with him," turning again to me, saying, "Vida is with him." Then she said, "You do want me, Dad. I'm coming." Deeply impressed by his wife's report, Barrett collected this and other cases he could find into a small book entitled Deathbed Visions, published in 1926. Barrett concluded that deathbed visions tend to be of apparitions of the dead who seem to the dying person to appear with the purpose of taking them away. When such visions occur, the dying person is usually rational and clear-minded, and the dying person often reacts with emotions of joy or serenity. 30 years later, Barrett's work inspired a modern large-scale study undertaken by Carlis Osis and Erlander Haraldsson that surveyed thousands of physicians and nurses regarding their experiences with dying patients in both the United States and India. As with the earlier study, most visions were of otherworldly visitors, usually deceased relatives, which were reported by patients as being there to take the dying person away. Osis and Haraldsson summarized their results by saying, "In both the United States and India, the visions of the dying and of near-death patients were overwhelmingly dominated by apparitions of the dead and religious figures. This finding is loud and clear. When the dying see apparitions, they are nearly always experienced as messengers from a post-mortem mode of existence." Osis and Haraldsson considered various alternative explanations for such cases, including drugs, disease, and religious expectations. After rigorous statistical analysis, they rejected them all. There are also several other cases on record of the patient claiming to see a friend or relative of whose recent death they were unaware. The following case was reported by Dr. Minot Savage. It involves two American girls, 8 years of age, Jenny and Edith, who were close friends. In June of 1889, both caught diphtheria, and Jenny died at noon on a Wednesday. Edith's parents decided not to tell her that Jenny had died, and shortly before Edith died, she asked her parents to give Jenny two photographs and say goodbye to Jenny for her. According to witnesses, she appeared to see friends she knew were dead. But now suddenly, with every appearance of surprise, she turned to her father and exclaimed, "Why, Papa, I'm going to take Jenny with me. Why, Papa, why did you not tell me that Jenny was here?" And immediately she reached out her arms as if in welcome and said, "Oh, Jenny, I'm so glad you are here." A more modern case involving a person from a non-Western culture was reported by two nurses who have spent decades working with the dying. The case involved a dignified Chinese woman, Sue, who was getting devoted care from her daughter, Lily. Both were Buddhists and very accepting of the mother's terminal status. They said, "I've had a good life for 93 years, and I've been on this earth long enough." She dreamed often of her husband, who had died some years before. "I will join him soon," she said. But one day Sue seemed very puzzled. "Why is my sister with my husband?" she asked. "They are both calling me to come." "Is your sister dead?" I asked. "No, she still lives in China," she said. "I have not seen her for many years." When I related this conversation to the daughter, she was astonished and tearful. "My aunt died 2 days ago in China," Lily said. "We decided not to tell mother. Her sister had the same kind of cancer. It was a very painful death. She lived in a remote village where good medical care wasn't available. We didn't want to upset or frighten mother, since she is so sick herself." When the mother was told of her sister's illness and death, she smiled and said, "Now I understand." She died 3 weeks later, at peace. Another modern case was described by Natalie Kalmus, a pioneer developer of the Technicolor process. Natalie's sister, Eleanor, was dying, with Natalie beside her at the last moments of her life. "I sat on her bed and took her hand. It was on fire. Then Eleanor seemed to rise up in bed, almost to a sitting position. 'Natalie,' she said, 'there are so many of them. There's Fred and Ruth. What's she doing here?' An electric shock went through me. She had said Ruth. Ruth was her cousin who had died suddenly the week before. But I knew that Eleanor had not been told of the sudden death. I felt on the verge of some wonderful, almost frightening knowledge. Her voice was surprisingly clear. 'It's so confusing. There are so many of them.' Suddenly her arms stretched out happily. 'I'm going up,' she murmured. Shortly after, Eleanor died." These cases were considered in my second book. As for an explanation in terms of ESP, I concluded, "The skeptic must say that the dying person telepathically or clairvoyantly gains true information about a recently deceased friend or relative, but about nothing else, and that the rest of the content of the vision is pure hallucination. It should be clear that this is a purely ad hoc theory, invented to explain these cases and nothing else. If this theory is to be more than merely dogma, it must be independently testable. And if this theory is to be testable, then from it certain predictions must follow. But there is not a shred of independent evidence that the dying become much more clairvoyant or telepathic in the final moments of life, and not a shred of independent evidence that ESP dresses up knowledge of unpleasant occurrences into pleasant hallucinations. The predictions of the theory in its testable form are not borne out, and if the theory is still maintained, then it is just another example of what Popper called an immunizing tactic." Today I was reading from Chris Carter's book, The Case for the Afterlife: Evidence of Life After Death. If you want to buy the book, there is info and a link in the show notes. And my book on verified near-death experiences is out now on Amazon and on other great bookshops. A great way to support this podcast is to sign up on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the button on my homepage, pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.